And now it's time for this week's Release Radar right here on CFRC 101.9 FM in partnership with the City of Kingston and the Kingston Music Office. And today we're featuring Pound Salt's new single Stadium, released on October 11th. Stadium is a high-energy rock anthem that really captures Kingston, Ontario. With its fiery vocals and driving beat, the song looks back at some major local events that brought the community together. And it's all about celebrating the city's vibe and the people who make it special. The powerful sound just makes you want to sing along. Check out at Pound Salt Music on Instagram and stream Stadium now. Want to get your new release highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form through the Kingston Music Office website or via Instagram at visitkingston.music. And now let's enjoy Stadium by Pound Salt right here on CFRC.
It is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. After 16 years of serving the Kingston community, Loving Spoonful has announced it will cease operations due to ongoing funding challenges. Loving Spoonful is a nonprofit dedicated to addressing food insecurity, encouraging sustainability, and supporting local food producers in Kingston. Loving Spoonful began as a volunteer-driven food collection and redistribution initiative. Over the years, it expanded into various essential programs, including the Grow Project in over 20 elementary schools, numerous community kitchens programs, the Kingston Community Gardens Network, the Local Food Access Pay What You Can Community Harvest Gardens, the Community Training Farm, and the Community Harvest Gardens. The board of Loving Spoonful undertook a thorough review of its operations before reaching the difficult decision to wind down, citing the current economic climate as the reason, and noting that this is a significant hurdle for many charities across Canada. Discussions are already underway about how to carry forward the organization's mission as Loving Spoonful finishes out their current agreements before closing their doors for good. I sat down with Loving Spoonful's treasurer, Judy Peterson, to discuss the announcement. Loving Spoonful is closing down due to lack of funding. How did you come to this decision, and how long has this been a conversation within the organization?
Well, it's been a conversation pretty much this calendar year, mostly. Certainly as we came into the calendar year, we started to get some senses about approval for grant funding, and the amount of donations and that we were getting was trending down. So we started to do a bit of research in that regard, particularly with organizations like the Canada Helps. They do this big Canada Giving Report, which has got some really helpful stats. But we also communicated with a number of like organizations and colleagues or people like that in Kingston. And we're getting concerned that there might be some issues. And then as we moved into, I guess, in the springtime, a number of the funds that we had applied for, we didn't get. And so this started to cause some concerns. And we were basically getting kind of a standard response in terms of more people are asking for more money. There's only so much to go around, to put it very simply. So we started to look of where we were at and realized that we only had so much runway in terms of making sure that we could continue to meet obligations like payroll and getting the work done with the funders that we all, agreements that we already had. So that is when we started to look at how we could make sure kind of three primary things. We wanted to try to preserve as much as we could of the Loving Spoonful programs. We wanted to make sure we were in a position to give staff as much notice as possible. And at the same time, be in a position to complete agreement deliverables that were already on the plate. So that's how we kind of came to the position that we announced on the website a week or two ago.
And you mentioned there the future of some of these programs. Is there a future for the many programs Loving Spoonful is involved in, or are you sort of just finishing out with the current funding that you have?
Well, what we did was we sought out like-minded organization in the community that could potentially have a mutual benefit to move some of these programs to. And that's what we're currently in negotiations with another organization to do that.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's very hopeful that maybe some of these programs will live on beyond Loving Spoonful. And you did mention you've been talking with other organizations. Do you worry that this is a trend that other organizations might also cease operations due to funding issues?
Certainly, that's kind of the sense that we were getting back, is that the whole sort of economic landscape is presenting funding challenges for many charities, locally, nationally, in the province, and everywhere. And we're getting that from other charities and other organizations that are reaching out to get funding from other places.
the organization is continuing to finish out with the current funding you have and pass off current programs. How long until Loving Spoonful's doors officially close?
Well, we're hoping to it's March of 2025 is we have obligations until that point in time. With certain funders, and we're looking to hopefully do any transitioning of anything within that time frame.
Okay, yeah, for sure. And how are the staff handling it right now?
Well, I'm on the board, and the staff are, it's been very difficult for them. They have been just a remarkably dedicated group of people, and they've put a lot of their, you know, heart and soul and passion into these programs. So they're finding it really, really difficult to make this change.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'd like to just shout out that they've done a tremendous job in terms of getting them to where they're at today, and the outpouring that we've received from many people in Kingston and outside of Kingston in terms of the amount of value they have found from these programs has been great. And so that helps a bit to hear that, but it is but very hard for them, but they're also doing their best to help us preserve the legacy as much as we can.
Yeah, absolutely. And did you have any final comments on this news and what it means for Kingston and the Loving Spoonful community?
Well, I'll just reiterate that we're grateful to the community for how much appreciation that they have had to say about it. And we're really hoping that for the staff, especially, that we can come up with the best outcome possible for them.
Once again, that was Judy Peterson with A Loving Spoonful on the recent news of the organization's decision to close down. That wraps up your headlines for this evening. Next up is Jesse Bell with your CFRC Sports Desk.
This is Jesse Bell from the CFRC Sports Desk, and this is your sports report. After a well-earned week of rest, the Queens Gaels football team will be at home this coming Saturday for their homecoming clash against the Waterloo Warriors. The Gaels find themselves in fifth place in the OUA with a 4-3 record, looking to pick up their fifth win of the season over the still winless Waterloo Warriors. Though the game will have a great deal of significance for the graduating seniors, regardless of the result, it will not impact Queen's playoff status. The Gaels are guaranteed to make the playoffs thanks to early season victories over the McMaster Marauders and Ottawa Gigis, the two teams directly below them in the standings. Queens also cannot finish any higher than fifth place, given that the team that is one game ahead of them, the Windsor Lancers, holds a victory over the Gaels. They beat them in their season opener way back on August 24th. The OUA playoffs are also set. Laurier, regardless of if they win or not, is guaranteed the top seed. Western will be the second seed, Guelph the third, Windsor the fourth, Queens the fifth, and either Ottawa or McMaster will finish 6th or 7th, but both teams are guaranteed a playoff date. The Gaels will be playing the Windsor Lancers in Windsor for their playoff contest, a rematch of their season opening game, which the Gaels lost by 3 points. Queens will have to play every single game on the road in the playoffs, including if they advance beyond the provincial playoff structure and into the national playoffs. It's going to be a long stretch of games for the Gaels, October into hopefully November, but it's one they'll have to weather if they want a chance to play for the Vanier at Richardson Memorial Stadium on Saturday, November 23rd. The Gaels have their final home game of the season coming up on Saturday. They'll be hosting the Waterloo Warriors. 1 p.m. scheduled kickoff time, but do tune in at 12:45 p.m. for the Something in the Water pregame show. This is Jesse Bell signing off and leaving you with a promo for that aforementioned homecoming football game.
There's no place like home, and there's no experience quite like Queens Homecoming Football live at Richardson Memorial Stadium. Whether you're in Kingston or abroad, you can experience all the excitement, intensity, and reverence of homecoming football live on CFRC 101.9 FM. Tune in on Saturday, October 19th at 12:45 p.m. for the pregame show ahead of the 1 p.m. kickoff between your Queens Gaels and the Waterloo Warriors. Can Waterloo spoil the party and record their program's first win ever over the Gaels? Or will Queens ring in homecoming in style with a massive victory in front of their steadfast supporters? There's only one way to find out, and if you can't be there live, hear it all on CFRC 101.9 FM or CFRC.ca.
Now for your CFRC weather report for this evening. Tonight we're expecting partly cloudy skies clearing after midnight. We have a low of -1 with a wind chill that's going to feel like -5 overnight. On Thursday, October 17th, we're expecting sunny skies with winds up to 15 kilometers per hour and a high of 13 degrees. With wind chill that's going to feel like -5 in the morning. UV index will be 4 or moderate. We have clear skies in the evening and a low of 0. On Friday, October 18th, we're expecting sunny skies with a high of 17 degrees. Friday night, clear skies with a low of +5. Looking forward to the weekend, temperatures are going back up and we're expecting sunny skies with a high of 18 degrees on both Saturday and Sunday. That wraps up your quick weather report for this evening, and next up is your CFRC traffic report.
This is Jesse Bell from CFRC 101.9 FM with your weekly traffic report. Pavement rehabilitations will take place along Highway 401 between Westbrook Road to beyond the Highway 15 overpass and on the Sir John A. McDonald overpass. This work will consist of various lane and ramp closures over the next several months. Highway 401 eastbound at Highway 15 will have a full mainline closure October 15th from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m., October 16th from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m., and October 17th from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. Gardner's Road and Sydenham Road eastbound ramps will be closed from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. October 16th and 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. October 17th. And last, but certainly not least, Sir John A. McDonald and Division Street eastbound ramps will be closed from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. on the 16th and 17th of October. The LaSalle Causeway will be temporarily closed on Tuesday, October 15th to allow a planned opening for marine traffic. This means the causeway will be inaccessible to pedestrians, cyclists, transit, and motorists from 9 a.m. to midnight. And now we move to the road closures for the week. Bagot Street, Barry to West will be closed October 15th and 16th from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. each day for tree removal. Barry Street at Stewart Street will be closed October 15th at 7 a.m. to October 18th at 7 p.m. for road reconstruction. Charles Street, Bagot to Montreal will be closed October 15th to the 25th to accommodate new utilities installation. Cooper Street, Albert to Collingwood will be closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. For project details, please visit Get Involved Kingston. Hillcrest, Kings Court to 7th will be closed until October 31st for buried infrastructure replacement. The road will remain open just to local traffic, however. Kings Court Avenue, Hillcrest to Kirkpatrick will be closed until November 15th to accommodate a water main replacement. Lower Union Street, King to Ontario will be closed October 17th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. for crews to complete tree pruning. Union Street, Willingdon to Albert will be closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. University Avenue, Union to Earl will be closed for construction-related activity at the Queen's John Deutsch University Center project. The Hanson Memorial parking structure will be closed for 4 days from October 17th to October 20th for planned construction and reconstruction work. This concludes your weekly traffic report for the City of Kingston.
Now it's time for your CFRC Community Concerts calendar for October 14th to October 20th. Have an event you'd like covered on our website and news programming? Contact us via CFRC.ca today. Wednesday, October 16th, Radical System Art. Momentum of Isolation comes to Kingston Grand Theater this Wednesday, a thematic dance performance centered around the struggles and difficulties related to social isolation in the digital age. Tickets are available at kingstongrand.ca and the show starts at 7:30 p.m. On Thursday, October 17th, classic horror doesn't get more classic than this. Come see a live performance of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde this Thursday at the Domino Theater. A night of frights and drama, this show is a perfect lead-up to Halloween. Tickets and additional dates and times are available at kingstongrand.ca and the show starts at 7:30 p.m. On Friday, October 18th, Sonia Bergen will be performing live this Friday from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Royal Tavern 2.0. Her soulful and deep music is loved by audiences everywhere. Come enjoy a moving and emotional music session. Admission is free. On Saturday, October 19th, The Broom Factory is proud to present Feral Minx and Luscious with special guest Pound Salt. Come for an evening of exciting music and see what some of the best local artists of Kingston have to offer. Tickets are available at ticketscene.ca. Doors open at 7 p.m. Panache A is a musical duo that always brings the fun while performing renditions of classic English and French children's songs that love to entertain audiences of all ages. Come see a whimsical and fun-filled live show for all ages this Saturday at 11 at the East Community Center. Admission is free. Finally, finishing off the week on Sunday, October 20th. For any parents out there this weekend, the Isabel Bader Center is proud to present Shoestring Opera and their performance of the Shoestring Magic Flute. This kid-friendly version of Mozart's famous opera is aimed at young listeners and is the perfect way to finish your weekend. Come see this fun-filled adventure this Sunday at 2 p.m. Now for your community events calendar for the rest of this week. Tonight, folks can enjoy weekly singing for self-care, connection, and a more beautiful world at the Fiercely OK Weekly Singing Community, held at Chalmers United Church. A drop-in session is starting at 7 p.m. where all voices and experience levels are welcome. Muziki Cafe is also hosting its weekly life drawing event. Bring your own art supplies and $5 and participate in uninstructed life drawing and making new friends. Something in the Water Brewing and Daft Brewing will also host their trivia nights starting at 7 p.m. And One Eye Jacks will host North End Board Games Night for free, also starting at 7 tonight. Tomorrow, on Thursday, October 17th, Kingston Community Health Centers will host a senior social group for individuals 55 plus from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. Also on Thursday, the Tet Center invites local artists to the Art Death Cafe from 2 to 4 p.m. for artists interested in working within themes of death and dying, a pay-what-you-can event with refreshments served. Also on Thursday, head over with your runners to Runner's Choice for the weekly Out in Front Running Group for 2S LGBTQ plus runners, ready to run at 6:15 p.m. for 5 to 6 kilometers, followed by a post-run social. At 7:15 p.m. on Thursday, folks can enjoy Dark Night at Fort Fright, a weekly event running through Halloween. Enjoy scary attractions with costumed actors with your friends and family. Tickets are $30. The Domino Theater is hosting performances of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde through to November 3rd. Tickets range from $10 to $20. And of course, finally, on Thursday once again, the Grad Club is running its free and hugely popular trivia night every Thursday starting at 8 p.m. On Friday, October 18th, Queen's University and CFRC welcome alumni to campus for the weekend. Visit CFRC, Queen's Archives, the Queen's Alumni Review, and pick up your Gales football tickets from noon until 6 in Grant Hall. And stop by CFRC in Carruthers Hall for our open house. The YMCA will also host its weekly fresh food market from 9:30 to 12:30. A great opportunity to get fresh food at great prices. Also on Friday, Pumpkin Inferno at Kingston Penn launches running various days through the end of October. Check out amazing hand-carved pumpkin exhibits with the family. Admission is $16 to $21. On Saturday, October 19th, the Kingston Public Market runs from 8:30 to 4 p.m. in Springer Market Square. Also on Saturday, Queens Gales take on the Waterloo Warriors during the annual homecoming game at Richardson Stadium. Kickoff is at 1 p.m. You can also join us live on CFRC 101.9 FM and streaming at CFRC.ca to catch live coverage by our very own Jesse Bell and crew. On Sunday, October 20th, get up early and head over to Runner's Choice for an early morning long run starting at 8:30 a.m. folks and families can also head over to Fort Henry on Sunday and multiple dates through the end of October for Fort Fright to check out the goblins and ghouls. Special effects and sound and amazing actors starting at 7:15 to 11 p.m. Admission is $25. And finally, the Memorial Center Farmers Market will take place from 9 to 2 p.m. featuring food, artisanal crafts, and music. Have a concert or event you'd like to add to our online and on-air calendar? Reach out today via CFRC.ca. Don't forget to follow CFRC on Instagram at CFRC Music. Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we are pleased to present Sadie McFadden's deeply personal song, Grieve at 23, released on October 3rd. The song reflects on her mentorship and friendship with Prince Edward County artist Suzanne Pasternak, who passed away just over a year ago. With emotional vocals and poignant lyrics, McFadden beautifully captures the heartache of loss at a young age. The warm acoustic guitars build into uplifting, lush strings, perfectly expressing the confusion and pain of grief at such a pivotal age. Let's listen now to Sadie McFadden's Grieve at 23, right here on CFRC.
You and your daughter, she does too. Say you have one, but you are. This is CFRC 101.9 FM, your campus and community radio station, broadcast from the basement of Kerutas Hall, Queen's University, Kingston. You can also hear this program locally on Cogeco Cable, Channel 282, and is streamed online at cfrc.ca.
Welcome to Biotech Beat. This is your host, Chris. Today we will hear a talk on the topic, Why You Cannot Say Meat is Bad or Vegetables are Good, by Dr. Darren Smith, founder of Nutritional Healing Center, Ann Arbor, Michigan. Before that, here are a few messages.
Tree Canada's National Greening Program is planting seedlings across five regions of the country: BC, the Prairies, Ontario, Quebec, and the Atlantic. They plant in areas that are in need of reforestation or afforestation across Canada. Tree Canada selects sites where appropriate native species will be planted to make sure that natural forests come back to life. To learn more or to get involved, go to treecanada.ca.
I faced it. I have Alzheimer's disease.
My diagnosis has let me get on with my life my way.
The more we learned about my grandfather's dementia, the more we could face the future and make plans.
My husband, Tom, and I spoke to our doctor right away.
I have Alzheimer's, but it doesn't have me.
I faced it. So can you.
For more information about early diagnosis, visit alzheimer.ca.
CFRC is active on every social media platform. Check us out at CFRC Radio on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and on Twitter at CFRC.
This presentation is for people that think that vegetables are good and meat is bad. So if you know somebody who thinks that way, then you can send them this these series of slides. The first thing we need to do is talk about research. And once you understand research, then you can come to conclusions. There's so much misinformation about diets. 98% of what you hear is wrong about eating food. So before we start into that, I got to give you my diet history. My name is Dr. Darren Schmidt. I'm a chiropractor focusing on nutrition since 1993. And here's my diet history. I've been low carb since 1999, less than 75 grams of carbohydrates a day. And if I ever cheated on that, I would still be below 125 grams of carbs per day. In 2015, I started ketosis, cycling in and out of ketosis. In 2018, August, I started the carnivore diet. And the first year of the carnivore diet, I had one rule, and that is eat as much meat as I possibly can every day. And it was fantastic. And I put on some weight, and that was my goal. And I was in ketosis every day. In year two, and after that, eat as much meat as I need or want for the day. So I put on weight, like I said, but then my clothes were too tight. So then I dropped down about 6 or so pounds, and I've been staying at the same weight ever since. And I'm happy with that. My energy's good. Brain works good. Emotions are stable. And meat is the basis of the human diet. I spoke twice to the USDA Dietary Guidelines Committee to convince them to only look at science for the 2020 food pyramid update. They have to update that every 5 years. I failed at that. They did not look at science. In the bottom right corner of these slides is a red box. That's for a video presentation that I gave recently. So here's science. There's levels of evidence. There's seven. The bottom is expert opinion. And so one person has an opinion based on experience or knowledge or clinical experience, for example. Level six, one above, is single, descriptive, or qualitative study. And there's no science there. It's just a description. The next one up is a systemic review of descriptive and qualitative studies. And that includes observational studies too, also known as epidemiology. Again, no science there. There's no experiment. Level four is the case control or cohort study. Cohort just means group. So you're testing or surveying one group. And with real science, you need two groups minimum. One is a control group and the other one is the experimental group. So again, level three or level four, there's no science there. Now, level three is a controlled trial without randomization. And what that means is you have a group of people in a clinic and you do something to these people. And the control group would be the rest of the people in the clinic that are not participating in that trial. And they're not randomized. You could have some people with similar genetics or similar lifestyle choices or different, but it's not intentionally randomized. Okay, the next one up is one or more randomized controlled trials. Now, this is where you take a different people and put them in a group. and they have different genetics and different lifestyle habits, et cetera. And you're testing one thing in the experimental group versus the control group. And then level one is a systemic review and meta-analysis of the randomized control trials. And then you can get clinical guidelines based on these reviews, also known as a meta-analysis. So levels two and one, levels three, two, and one are science, because you have an experimental group and you do something to them. Now, levels four, five, six, seven are not science. They're the beginning of science. And I'm going to go over this in more detail so you fully understand. This is a pyramid showing what I just described. At the bottom, you have editorials, expert opinions. Above that, you have case reports. Above that, you have case-controlled studies, and then cohort studies. Again, cohort means group. You're looking at one group. There's no science there. There's no experiment done on a group of people then compared to the control group. And then at the very top of the pyramid, we have the upper two echelons. You got randomized control trials and systemic reviews. So this is somebody else's graphic describing what is science. When you see the cohort studies and below, those green ones, yellow, orange, those, that is not science. It's the beginning of science, and those give you really good, or maybe sometimes very poor, hypotheses, also known as educated guesses. Here's another author creating a graphic with a pyramid, and at the very top, we have randomized control trials. And above that, you could say a meta-analysis of randomized control trials. And to the right, it says, it is shown that. You can state a fact. It is shown that walking on grass makes your shoes muddy. And you know that because you experimented. You did an experiment with a group of people, and you had a control group, and it's a fact. So below that, you have controlled longitudinal studies. Again, that is not science. It's a survey. It's an observational study over a period of time. And it says it is likely that on the right. It says it is likely that. So you can't say it's a fact. You can say probably. And then below that, uncontrolled longitudinal studies, cross-sectional studies and case studies, those you can get the statement, there are signs that. There are signs that when you walk on mud, your shoes will stay clean. You know, like there's no fact there. It's just a hypothesis. And then at the very bottom, expert opinion. Now, I'm not degrading expert opinions in these studies. From these studies, you move them up the pyramid to the top, and then you actually do science. Then you get a fact. So if you have one person who's an expert and he's got an opinion or she, great. Keep moving that opinion up the ladder or up this pyramid to the top. So on the left, it says studies reviewed by the IARC. That's a note depicting that the International Association of Research on Cancer convinced the World Health Organization that meat is a class two carcinogen, but they didn't look at any science to come up with that conclusion. Those two arrows show you that they looked at uncontrolled longitudinal studies and cross-sectional studies and case studies. So when you hear a anti-meat advocate say that meat is a class two carcinogen, know that that's wrong. Know that it's based on opinion and survey. It's not based on any science. And this is the graphic that illustrates that. Okay, so surveys are not science. There needs to be an experiment where you do something to a group of people to cross the threshold from survey to science. So the lower parts of that pyramid is survey, the upper part is science. Okay, so here's some examples. These survey studies are not science. Cohort, longitudinal, cross-sectional, case study, case series, case control studies, observational studies, epidemiology, exploratory epidemiology. So those are all just fancy words describing different kinds of surveys. Okay, next slide on the same subject, surveys are not science. These studies are science. Controlled clinical trial, randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial, systemic review of only controlled trials. And that's it. There's no more other types of science. Now, I'm really specifically talking about nutrition. 95% or more of nutrition research is not science. Okay, so just keep that in mind. Another slide, surveys are not science. Here's some specific examples of surveys that are not science. Blue zones, there's books written on this. This guy has an empire, a financial empire based on his exploratory epidemiology known as the blue zones. The China study, it's very famous, but it's been debunked left and right. There's no science there. It's a survey, big survey. The EPIC study, NHANES. NHANES is the nutrition survey that the United States federal government has been funding since the 70s or something. And the Dietary Guidelines Committee that changes the food pyramid, they rely on NHANES like it's their pacifier or their baby blanket. Like that's their go-to. It's not science. The Okinawan study, that was post-World War II, and people said, oh, look, Okinawans live a long time. They don't eat meat. Well, post-World War II, that island was devastated and all the pigs were killed. So yeah, they didn't have meat because they were killed in the war. Now here are some studies that are science. They're well done, in a clinic, controlled. Okay, the Minnesota Coronary Study. This is a multi-clinic study, and they gave people vegetable oils versus animal fats. And the people with vegetable oils died sooner. They had more heart attacks and more cancer. So vegetable oils are bad. Animal food, animal fats are good. The Virta Health Study, a two-year keto study, shows that the ketogenic diet is the best for weight loss, the best for diabetes, than any other diet ever studied. The Women's Health Initiative, they took a group of women and they said, reduce your meat intake by 20%. And they followed them for years and they compared that group with the control group. And there was not a decrease in cancer for the women that dropped their meat intake. They did not get 20% sicker because they dropped their meat intake. There was no change in their health. And low carb beats low fat 36-0 in randomized control trials. And this reference below is the Public Health Collaboration of the UK, phcuk.org. And they're looking at the best of the best clinical trials on low-fat diets versus low-carb. And low-carb beats low-fat 36-0. And the last bullet point here, there are 1,910 low-carb clinical trials. All are ignored by the USDA Dietary Guidelines Committee. The people on that guidelines committee, they are wrapped up in money. They're funded by the food manufacturers. And the food manufacturers make big bucks. They have huge profit margins when they put together vegetable oils, salt, sugar, and refined grains, and they feed it to you thinking that it's food. That is not food. It's super toxic and deadly and malnourishing, and that's why our food pyramid is basically upside down. Okay, so how do you pinpoint an unethical diet expert or maybe a journalist or reporter? They say things about diet, and it sounds real smart, but it's not. This is what they often claim. The unethical diet experts often claim you need to look at the totality or preponderance of the science. And what that means is that all the science is equal. So you look at all of it together, and from that, then you come to a conclusion. Well, like I said earlier, 95% of nutrition research is a survey, and it's not science. So when you look at 95% nutrition research telling you that meat is bad and that vegetable oils are good, because that's what surveys do, and there's a reason why, then you come up with the wrong answers, and that's why 91% of American men are overweight, because of unethical diet experts saying that they know the science. So when you're on PubMed and you click on the upper left corner, you can weed out the non-science. So I have a little example there. You click on clinical trial and randomized control trial on the bottom left of this slide, and that gets rid of all the junk and you're left with real science. Unethical diet experts may also claim something like this: eating 5 almonds a day makes you live 11 years longer. I've heard this kind of thing about different plant foods. And it's not plausible. It's just not true. But what they do with the surveys that they come up with is they put these answers on Excel spreadsheets and they move the answers around and they do some math and they do various things and they think they're doing science on the Excel spreadsheet, but they're not. They're just moving data around. Then they come up with these ridiculous statements like eating 5 almonds a day makes you live 11 years longer. Here's another comment. A single nutritional chemical causes disease, and such as TMAO. Or LDL, and that's not plausible. So just looking at one chemical in the body, there's so many buffers and barriers and explanations and physiology and biochemical reactions that there's not one single nutritional chemical that causes disease. It just is not plausible. The Harvard School of Public Health diet survey is valid. This is what unethical diet experts may claim. That Harvard School of Public Health diet survey is not scientifically valid. It's been tested a few times. And people will underreport their calories or overreport their calories. The questions are poorly worded, and they'll do this survey once every 5 years. And they'll say, how many cups of spare ribs do you eat per year? Who's got an answer for that? That's a ridiculous statement. And this survey was created by Walter Willett, and he's still the head of this public health school. And he wrote a book, is very pro-vegan, anti-meat, and he's basing all that on surveys. So also, too, with this survey, they'll collect the data. And let's say they have like 5,000 people. All I got to do is hit send on by email, send it to all these people. It's really cheap. They fill it out. Some of them respond back. And then when they do another assessment of their health, let's say 5 years later, sometimes they just keep the same data on their diet from 5 years earlier, as if the people had not changed their diet or something. So there's just a lot of like unethical behavior and incomplete, incompetent behavior. And that rules nutrition, by the way. That kind of behavior, just it rules the industry, the profession. It's really sad. So at the bottom bullet point, the American Heart Association, American Medical Association, USDA, the American Dietetics Association, which has a new name now, but they all say a plant-based diet is optimal. And it's not. That's an appeal to authority. And can it be that all of those groups and associations are wrong? Absolutely, 100%, just because they're government-funded, just because they read the same studies, just because they have PhDs or masters or whatever, can they all be wrong? Yes, 100% wrong when they say meat is bad and you need a high-fiber diet, you need a high-carbohydrate diet, you need to reduce your animal protein and reduce your animal fat. All those statements, 100% wrong. And don't claim that, oh, because the government says it, it must be right. No, that's an appeal to authority. Or you could say, well, my favorite nutritionist on YouTube, he's really smart and he's always right. Nope, that's another appeal to authority. Another thing, I'm a chiropractor. So people say, well, you're only a chiropractor. That's, again, another appeal to authority. So what? My license doesn't really matter because I study the hell out of the subject and I'm giving you this information so that you can be as smart as me in this material. And then you can demonstrate the fact that you know the difference between a survey and science, and then you can come up with really good facts. Okay, moving forward, what is the scientific process? Okay, this is what an opinion has to do to become a fact. Okay, so science is not a paper. People say, oh, I got this paper showing blah, blah, blah. Okay, it's not just a paper. It's not a series of, it is a series of steps. All steps must be followed. This is key. The next four slides are different examples of the scientific process. So this circle here at the very top, it says observation. And so somebody says, oh, look, there's mud on the ground. And they have a question. If I walk in the mud, do my shoes get dirty? And then the hypothesis is, yes, I think that based on my experience and my knowledge and just looking with my eyes, I think that my shoes will get dirty. Then you do an experiment. And the experiment is where you do something. You have to do the thing. And then you walk on the muddy ground and you analyze your shoes and you come to a conclusion. Yes, walking on mud makes my shoes dirty. There, and the experiment is the key right there to prove that your hypothesis is correct or not. Okay, here's another way to say that. This is another graphic, another author, and you can see from the top, identify the problem, gather data, hypothesis, and then test the hypothesis with the experiment. So this shows that this is the scientific process. And next one, another one, you start at the very bottom, ask a question, do some background research, come up with a hypothesis, and then again, test the hypothesis by doing the experiment, analyze the data, at the very top, draw the conclusion, and then report the results. Now, when you report the results, that allows other clinics around the world to replicate your experiment and hopefully come up with the same results. That's another part of the scientific experiment. Okay, now this one, it claims to be the scientific process, but it's not, because nowhere in here does it say, do an experiment. It says, come up with a hypothesis, collect data, and does the data reject the hypothesis, yes or no? Okay, so guide to reading certain, now that I've bashed survey studies, let's look at how to read them. And then once we know how to read it, I'm gonna give you a collective of survey studies and I'll show you those conclusions. All right, when you're reading a survey study, observational, epidemiological, or whatever, at the very top bullet point, it says RR equals relative risk. OR means odds ratio. HR means hazard ratio. So just for the sake of simplicity, think of all of those as being the same. And what it is, it's a collection of data, and then you come up with a number. So if the number is one, then that thing that you're testing is neither harmful nor beneficial. So if you think that chewing gum, for example, will prevent toenail fungus, that's your hypothesis, and you do a survey, you do an observational study. If the number ends up being one, that means that chewing gum does not cause nor does it prevent toenail fungus. Okay, now if the number is less than one, it means that chewing gum prevents toenail fungus. And if the number is greater than one, it might mean that the chewing gum causes toenail fungus. Now, if it's greater than one, it can't just be like 1.05 or 1.1. or 1.2, it's gotta be 3, like 3.0, 4.0, 10.0. Okay, so that's important. So once you have an observational study with a relative risk of 4, then you can send that, and then you're thinking, well, maybe I should send it up to other researchers who have more money, more manpower, and they can do an actual experiment. They'll get 100 people chewing gum every day for 5 years, and 100 people not chewing gum for 5 years. And then you can see if chewing gum causes toenail fungus that way. That's the experiment. Okay, now the bottom bullet point says cigarettes have a relative risk of over 100. Okay, now compare that with, you know, various types of meat, for example, would be 1.15, right? So that's not good enough data to say that meat causes any harm. Okay, now here is a big collection of observational studies on a variety of foods to the left: wine, tomatoes, tea, sugar, salt, potato, pork, onions, olive oil, blah, blah, blah. So there's plants in there, there's drinks, there's meat. And then the question is, does eating plants affect cancer? And the answer is no, because the relative risk of all these studies combined is 0.998. It's basically one. So eating plants, eating other foods and meats, does it cause cancer? No. Does it protect you from cancer? No. According to all these studies, all these PhDs, all these, how many hundreds of thousands of people, maybe, I don't know how many people are in these studies collectively. This was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition in 2012. So bear with me on what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking. So what causes cancer? Bear with me. Okay, does protein intake affect cancer and heart disease? Because some people say, well, eating animal fat or animal protein is bad. And the answer is no. Protein, whether it's from plant or animal source, does not cause cancer or heart disease. It doesn't affect it in any way. Does it prevent it? Doesn't cause it. So the relative risk for cancer is 0.98. And the relative risk for heart disease is 0.99. So again, this is a big collection of many observational studies. And the reading, the reference is right there, BMJ, British Medical Journal. So you can have protein, animal, or plant, doesn't matter. You can have a variety of foods, and it doesn't cause cancers. Does red meat cause cancer or heart disease? Okay, so we talk about protein. What about just red meat as a specific food? Now we're not talking about observational studies here. These are actual scientific clinical experiments and a meta-analysis of them. And the answer is no. So the effect of lower versus higher red meat intake on cardiometabolic and cancer outcomes, a systematic review of randomized trials, only randomized trials. There are zero scientific experiments that show meat causes any disease. So when somebody says red meat causes disease, cancer, or heart disease, no, it does not. It never did, ever. In the history of humanity, red meat never, ever caused any disease, period. So let's get back to the earlier question. So if eating plants and meat and other foods does not cause heart disease, nor does it cause cancer, then what is it? Well, my theory is that it's a lack of ketosis. Basically, using sugar as fuel throughout your whole life for decades, and you can have a clean diet, and you can have relatively good blood glucose for, you know, 80 years, but then you get cancer because you never got any ketosis. That's my working theory, and having studied nutrition going back 150, 200 years, that's what I think is missing. This is Dr. Georgia Ead, and I'm such a big fan of her. She's a psychiatrist at Harvard. She actually works at the student clinic. So we're going to get into that in a second, but this is about a two and a half minute video. And what she did, she goes on PubMed, and she looks up vegetables and health, trying to find out if vegetables are good for human bodies. Here we go.
Just as an experiment, I wanted to get a feel for what kinds of evidence is out there supporting vegetables and health. And so what I did was I went on PubMed, and which is a search engine, for those of you who don't know, looking for scientific articles. And there are over 80,000 studies about vegetables, so I obviously couldn't go through all of those. Narrowed them down to randomized controlled studies having to do with vegetables and health. And I use the word health because if anything, that might induce a positive bias. It's looking for evidence to support vegetables. And so unfortunately, most of these studies I had to eliminate from the consideration because most of them were irrelevant to the question. The vast majority of studies about vegetables were about how to get people to eat more of them, not about whether or not they were actually healthy. So, and of the studies that remained, 18 of them were negative. The investigators were looking for health benefits from vegetables and didn't find what they were hoping to see. And as you might notice here, another problem with vegetable studies is that the vast majority of vegetable studies are not studies of vegetables. They're studies of fruits and vegetables. Fruits and vegetables are very different from a plant point of view and from our point of view. They're just completely different features. So hard to say. So in the positive studies, I found 10 positive studies, but unfortunately none of them controlled for refined carbohydrates. It's very hard to say whether or not the health benefits that the investigators claimed were due to the vegetables were due to the vegetables or whether they were due to the fact that the people who were eating more fruits and vegetables were eating less refined carbohydrate. And 10 other positive studies, unfortunately, manipulated more than one variable. So they didn't just add more vegetables to people's diets. They also happened to reduce sodium or reduce saturated fat or add exercise, et cetera. So it's just hard to tell which part of the diet was or the intervention was responsible for the health benefit. I'm not saying that the vegetables couldn't have been responsible, because they could have been. We just can't tell because of the way the studies were designed.
So this video is from 2012 showing that there are zero scientific studies that prove that vegetables are good for us. Now, I emailed Dr. Eid last month and I said, hey, have you ever done another follow-up on that kind of search? And she did. And she sent me the results. When she did the updated search, that was 2017. Again, zero scientific studies that show that vegetables are good for us. So now we're talking 6 years later. And do we have new studies since 2017 where somebody actually just studied vegetables and health and they did a clinical trial with an experiment? I don't know. Maybe you know. And if you do, send it to me. In the meantime, I'm staking the claim that there are zero scientific studies that show that vegetables are good for us. There's also zero scientific studies that show that meat is bad for us. Now, one more thing about Dr. Georgia Eid. She's being a psychiatrist at the student clinic at Harvard. Picture this. You got a 20-year-old Harvard student, and they walk in. They're depressed, and they send her to the psychiatrist. So Dr. Eid sees this patient and says, what are you eating? And they go over the diet, and then Dr. Georgia says, okay, you need to eat some red meat, probably every day. Eat red meat every day. And then they get better and they're not crying anymore and they don't need psychotropic drugs anymore. And she did the study, 31 inpatients, 100% of them got better. 100% of these people got better. And 43% had clinical remission of their diagnosis. And these are people, there were 12 of them that had bipolar, 6 had major depression, 10 had schizophrenia. And they went on a ketogenic diet, 75 to 80% fat, 15 to 20% protein, 5% carbohydrates. And that was appropriate for them because we're talking primarily students. They're still young. The brain isn't fully developed until the age of 25. These people needed to eat fat. And all the nutritionists, all the mess halls, everybody's saying fat is bad, do a low fat diet. And that makes people sick mentally and physically too. All right, let's talk about this guy, Dr. John Ioannidis. I'm gonna say it again. Ioannidis is how you say his last name. Medical doctor, meta researcher. He says nutritional epidemiology is a scandal. It should just go to the waste bin. So Ioannidis compares randomized control trials versus epidemiology. And I've studied his work. I've read several articles from him. He's just absolutely brilliant. He studies the studies and he also studies the science. And he looks at the science of all the different professions. So material science, space exploration science, biomedical research, economics research and science, and pharmacy.